Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Senator Gillibrand, I can't tell you how delighted we are to have you with us. I wanted to ask you about the major piece of legislation that you're offering on military sexual assault policy. And I wondered if you'd just give us a little primer and then tell us where you think it ought to be going.
Thanks, Alan. I'm delighted to be on your show. This issue is so important because what we have is an epidemic within the military where sexual assaults, rapes, and unwanted sexual contact are rampant. We had 26,000 cases of sexual assault, rape, and unwanted contact last year alone. And unfortunately, of those 26,000 cases, only about 3,000 ever were reported. And of the 3,000, about 1 in 10 ended in conviction. So you're starting out with only 1 in 100 cases where justice is done. And what victims tell us is the reason why they're not reporting is because they fear retaliation, and they also believe that nothing will be done in their cases. They don't think their chain of command will be able to do anything or will do anything. And so as a consequence, there's just not enough transparency and accountability. So the solution that we're offering is saying that instead of commanders who may well be biased, who may know the victim, who may know the perpetrator, who may value the perpetrator more, who may not want a victim to come forward because it may look, make him look badly, those are biases, and we want to take the decision-making out of the chain of command so that a trained military prosecutor can actually look at the evidence objectively and make the decision based on whether there's enough evidence that a crime's been committed. That's what we want to do, and I think that will create the kind of transparency and accountability that the men and women who serve in our military so sorely deserve.
Yeah, some people are painting this as saying, okay, that what you want is you want to take it out of the military. Nothing could be further from the truth, right? I mean,
Correct. It stays in the military. It's just given to military JAG officers who are actually lawyers, trained prosecutors, who understand the challenges of these cases. Right now, the only decision maker is a commander who's not a lawyer, who doesn't know anything about prosecutorial discretion, and may well have a bias.
Okay. So it's your contention that basically there's some obstructionism coming from the Republicans. Is that right? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
This is not a partisan issue. We have support on the Democrat and Republican side. We have supporters from the most liberal of Barbara Boxer and others to the most conservative of Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. So it is a consensus bill. It's one that when anybody looks at this problem from a matter of common sense, they want to support it because they know that, you know, when our men and women, they are offering everything to this country for our values, for our nation, even their lives, but they should not be subjected from attack, not from some foreign enemy, but an attack from their own ranks. That's unacceptable. And so when they look at the evidence fairly, they say, we need transparency and accountability.
When I worked for the New York City Police Department 1,000 years ago, and they were first putting women and men together into a police car, there were those, including some of the wives of the guys who were there, saying, you know, this is too much of a temptation. That's what creates this kind of sexual tension. How do you react to that?
Well, sadly, these crimes are not gender-based. More than half of the victims are male. So it's not an issue that just affects women. It affects women and men nearly equally in terms of numbers. So we need to do something for the men and women who serve. And, you know, when we told the military they had to integrate the forces, they gave us the same excuse. They said, you can't possibly do this. It'll undermine good order and discipline. When we added women to the armed services, they said the same thing. When we added openly gay members to serve, they said the same thing. This is something that is typically said when the military wants to maintain the status quo, and the status quo is not acceptable.
Do you face a filibuster on this bill?
We will. We will likely face a filibuster. One of my dear colleagues, Lindsey Graham, has said he will do anything to make sure this bill does not pass. I suspect that includes a filibuster. So we are going to get the 60 votes. We are close to getting 60 votes. We will get the 60 votes. We will make sure justice is done for the brave men and women in our military.
And, Senator, what is the alternative plan that those who don't like your plan are putting up?
Well, we've passed through a number of reforms already that are all very good, things to make the system better for those who do report. But Interestingly, this is the only reform that actually does something about increasing reporting, because it's the only one that does something to answer what the survivors have said in the cases that go unreported. They say they don't trust the chain of command. So unless you listen to them and believe them, you're not going to do something about that challenge unless you do take this decision point out of the chain of command. And our allies have already done this. The UK, Israel, Canada, Australia, Netherlands, Germany, they've taken the decision making for all major crimes out of the command structure for this very reason. They believed the scales of justice should not be tipped for the defendant or for the victim, and they wanted trained military prosecutors to make these decisions. Justice should be blind, and I think the same is true for the U.S. military.
Okay. Our time is precious. Let me change gear here to something that's related, which is the Employee Non-Discrimination Act. Tell us about that.
Well, the Employee Non-Discrimination Act is a landmark bill that basically says you cannot discriminate against men and women because they're gay. It protects the LGBT population from discrimination just based on their sexual orientation or gender and gender preference. And so I think it's important that this bill is finally passed the Senate. We need to fight very hard that it passes the House. It is essential that all men and women can work in the workplace free of discrimination and harassment, and I think it's a very important part of our civil rights march.
So let me ask you this. You mentioned the word House, and so I want to go there for a second. You've got basically a conservative group who have, for want of a better word, a stranglehold in the House and doesn't let legislation come out. And I'm wondering, is this all for naught? I mean, both of these bills, the military bill, this non-discrimination bill, what happens if, you know, the leaders say, the rules committee say, you're not getting a rule and we're not letting this out?
Well, we don't know that yet. And with all things that take time, when the American people stand up and demand action, good things can happen. And I think this is an issue where there's enormous amounts of common sense. There's bipartisan support for it. People in America generally believe you shouldn't discriminate against someone based on who they are. And so I think it's going to be a tough fight. I think it's certainly an uphill battle, but it doesn't mean we can't be successful. And so I think fighting the battle is really important. Asking our colleagues for their votes, really bringing it to a vote is essential, and I think that's the way democracy works. Sometimes you don't pass something on the first go, but over time you can. We saw that in our own state with marriage equality. We failed the first time we brought marriage equality in our state legislature, but after having a successful vote on anti-bullying and a successful vote on adoption rights, we were able to pass marriage equality too. So sometimes you need to build on each success, and having a favorable vote in the Senate is a very good stepping stone to at least getting a productive vote in the House.
How goes the budget talks?
You know, the budget talks are vitally important. I think it was wonderful that the women of the Senate came together to break the logjam, having Susan Collins come forward and meet with Patty Murray and figure out a framework to at least move us forward for the next 3 months, I think made a difference. And so I think the work is being done. I think there'll be a modest level of agreement. I don't think there'll be a sweeping bargain given the politics. But I'm hopeful that something positive can come of it where we can at least move this country forward and not have to, again, put our good faith and credit at risk.
I've got a minute of your time. I want to ask you about, does the president get past the Affordable Care Act, or is it going to be a terrible millstone around his neck?
No, I believe we will figure out all the computer glitches in good time. I think it's unfortunately been very disappointing for me. It's been disappointing to the president that the rollout didn't go more smoothly. But these are computer challenges. What actually matters is the reforms of the health care law, the fact that you cannot have your coverage dropped because of a pre-existing condition, the fact that you can cover your kids up to 26, the fact that all preventive care is covered and affordable. That is so transformational. That's what we have to focus on. And if we can just get beyond our challenges on the computer system, we will see affordable health care opportunities for families all across America that didn't have any. And that's what's necessary to really bring health care to all Americans.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, thank you so much for being with us and honoring us with your presence.
Thank you, Alan, for everything.
And we'll be talking to you soon, I hope.
Okay, yeah. Take care.